This podcast is sponsored by Q Interactive, Pearson's iPad-based system for testing, scoring, and reporting. Experience unheard-of efficiency and client engagement with 20 of our top tests delivered digitally. Sign up for your free 30-day trial at pearsonclinical.com/speechscience. Then call 1-800-627-7271 to use promo code SPEECHSCIENCE for 10% off your new Q Interactive license. Offer valid until December 31st, 2018.
Please listen carefully.
What is communication?
The act of taking a thought from my head and putting it into your head.
Essential behavior of life. We have the both blessing and responsibility of trying to foster
it. It's the strongest way for two people to convey information to each
other. What I have in my head to the outside world
draws us out of ourselves, draws us into that relationship, you know, builds up our families. Without it, we'd be lost.
I think it's the ability to share your innermost feelings and thoughts with
Whatever
others.
Whatever it is that we do to express intent and achieve an impact.
Communication is the ability to express your needs, wants, frustrations, and desires to anyone that you feel needs to have that information.
Welcome to Speech Science, episode 51. I'm Matt Hott, joined in Philadelphia by Michael McLeod.
What's up, buddy?
And down in the heart of Kentucky, Michelle Wintering.
How's it going?
Is Louisville, Lexington, wherever you are, Fort Knox, considered the heart of Kentucky?
I'm still learning Kentucky, so we are closest to Louisville, if that's what you're thinking.
Hey, I don't know. I've been to Louisville. I've been to Kentucky multiple times, and I've been to Newport, but not much farther south. Michael,
hey,
how
you've
are
been
Giants
to the Bourbon
doing?
Trail. You've been
I
right near me.
Did I had some bourbon this weekend at a 2-year-old's birthday party? That was exciting.
Nice.
My little guy turned 2 last week, so we had his party yesterday.
Yeah, he has the same birthday as me.
He is, and that's why I remembered to text you, because it was like, oh, yeah, it's the same birthday. And then once the family all kind of started to leave, I figured it was time for Grandpa's cough syrup, as I had a Coke and some bourbon to relax at the end of a 2-year-old's birthday party. Michael, you are watching your Giants lose to the Falcons. How are you doing?
I'm pretty used to them losing by now, so I'm fine.
Oh goodness!
How was your week?
Oh, that's what you meant. It was good. It was last week was good. Yeah. So I'm working with some students. I'm working with my overall team. Been doing a lot of going to a lot of IEP meetings, having a lot of parent meetings, really putting together a lot of treatment plans for the school year, organizing some IEP goals and some plans with the schools. So just a lot of things outside of the realm of therapy, but a lot more intakes, a lot more working with some brand new students, which is always exciting. So it's been real busy.
And Miss Michelle, how's your week been?
Well, I had my birthday since whoop, whoop. Your son had his birthday, and also celebrated my little niece's birthday, who was born the same day
Aww.
As your son. She's also just turned 2.
Oh, isn't 2 years old great? It's like a little mini terrorist frat kid that can't communicate.
That can communicate just enough to cause more problems by communicating.
So let me run you through the life and times of Andrew Hott, the 2-year-old terrorist.
Tell us about Andrew.
On his birthday, Dad went out and got balloons, Mickey Mouse balloons.
Nice.
Then we filled them up and I took them home. Well, I gave them to him and he let them go. And then he screamed because he couldn't reach them, because guess what? Balloons floated to the ceiling. So Dad, the super dad, pulled them back down and gave them to him. He then walked, fell, let go of the balloons, cried over falling, and then realized he didn't have balloons in his hands and started screaming. He then carried the balloons to the living room and then let them go into the fan, which then caused one to pop. So then he was super mad because the balloon was just like hanging off of the other balloons like a dead carcass as he was trying to hold on to it, screaming. Then all the people came over, all family and friends came over down here, and it was all about him. And he asked for chicken, and we gave him a piece of chicken, and he put it in his mouth, spit it out, laid on the floor, kicked and screamed in the middle of everybody. Wow. Then,
happy birthday, Andrew.
And then it was over and he was happy. I don't know why. I don't know what happened. I don't know when it stopped. It just all of a sudden he was just like, all right, I'm good. Someone gave me a strawberry. I'm going to go eat now. It's like living with a drunk frat terrorist that cannot communicate.
That is the perfect terrible two story.
I love it. A lot of people say, well, you have, how old is your other son? I can't remember. Five?
Mike is five.
Would mm-hmm. you say two is worse or three? Because I hear a lot of parents say three is worse.
I'd have to ask the wife, but I would guess that Michael didn't have a terrible phase.
Yeah.
So we got lucky. I mean, he's kind of hit his stride now at five.
Oh, but, for terrible but more five?
Like, but no, it's more like five going on 50. So he's got like opinions and stories and ideas.
He's the one that we always see in the background?
Yeah. He's the one that's always cruising around in the background, silently judging me for my career choices. And...
Nice. he's just like all of us.
Yeah, pretty much. Nice. He's the one that can play video games better than me now in an arcade. It's wonderful, really. It's my kid is cooler than I am, and he's five. And now my two-year-old, he's got my temper. So I'm sure he's going to be wonderful.
That's awesome.
Now you know. Now you guys know why I bring my wife flowers probably once every 3 or 4 weeks, because I feel bad for her. We have three cats, all boys, two kids, all boys, me, I'm pretty sure I'm a boy. She's outnumbered in the house.
She deserves flowers. That's
she
fair.
Deserves a lot.
She deserves more than flowers, but flowers are good.
Real quick, before we go any farther, are you guys going to Asha?
I'm trying to work it out. I would like to.
I am not.
Yeah, me neither. I want to go next year. It's in Orlando.
Hey, we'll make a speech science trip out of it. Let's do it.
Broadcast live.
We'll open a speech science credit card and then bankrupt the company with no income, but we'll pay for our negative
income. Let's be real.
Sure, it's like tax fraud or something, but it's fine.
It's all good.
We want to hear from you. Are you going to Asha? Go to our website, podcast.speechscience.org. From there, you can email us, speechscience2018@gmail.com, or give us a phone call, 614-681-1798. Coming up around the bend, we're going to talk a little bit about the latest in the Asha leader, talking about breastfeeding and communication. How is Texas going to fix their special education? And how do we train families to deal with dementia? You're listening to Speech Science.
Some knowledge belongs to us and us alone. The way our girlfriends walk, the way they talk, the way they touch their hair. We hold details that only a sister can know about her girls. But what about our other girls? The ones that we carry with us every day. Can we describe them when everything's right? Can we feel when something's wrong? Our bond with our sister girls gives life. But knowing your breasts can save it. You don't know go to knowyourgirls.org for the facts you need on breast health. That's knowyourgirls.org, brought to you by Susan G. Coleman and the Ad Council.
Okay, men, this is your time. Maybe you didn't choose this, but you're here now. You're gonna go out there and be an all-star caregiver. It's up to you. So what are you gonna do? You're gonna go grocery shopping, cook, clean, be there emotionally and physically. You gotta dig deeper. Drive them to physical therapy, doctor's appointments. Don't you forget about the pharmacy. I know you won't, because that's what caregivers do. Don't give up. Don't ever give up. This is your time to show the world, your family, and yourself that you're tougher than tough. Now go out there and be the best caregiver this world has ever seen. Caregiving is tougher than tough. Find the care guides you need at aarp.org/caregiving.
a public service announcement brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Do you have an idea for a product or book? Or are you ready to go beyond in-service presentations? Well, how do you get started? And what if you don't have any business experience at all? Well, I have some great news for you. I'm Mei-Ling Chan, and I'm getting the nitty-gritty stories from parents, teachers, therapists, advocates, and people with disabilities who have created successful businesses, and they're sharing their intimate stories with you. Listen to us on the Exceptional Leaders Podcast and fast-track creating and building and sharing your idea with the world so that you can help more people.
Welcome back to Speech Science. I'm Matt Hott, episode 51. I know I said I would stop saying it, but I keep saying it. Joined in the South by Michelle Wintering.
Hello.
And out East by Michael McLeod.
What's up?
Is it East? I mean, it's out East. I'm in the Midwest East, so
it's
you're east of me.
It's Northeast.
Northeast.
Yeah.
I'm in the Southwest corner of Ohio, and it's cornfields or cities. That's all we got out here.
Okay. Sounds boring.
Oh, I like it though.
Oh,
I got a new patient and I was looking at how long it would take me to drive to get there. And it's going to take me an hour and 30 minutes just to drive to their house.
Wow.
Because they don't live near a highway. And I'm like, oh, well, I'll leave my house at 7.
Man.
All right. Well, out of the ASHA leader this week, this is written by Catherine Shaker, a speech and language pathologist, and a BCS. I'm not sure what a BCS is.
I had to look that up. It's a board-certified specialist in swallowing and swallowing disorders, and I really want to know where you get this.
Okay.
You get Catherine from ASHA, I believe.
Yeah?
I believe.
Okay.
Yeah, I know ASHA offers, like, if you want to get certified in other areas. I just did not realize that's what the BCSS was.
Hey, we all want more letters after our names, right? Like, we already start pretty good with our letters, with our ASHA C's and our
MACCC, SLP, yeah.
Exactly.
Well, ASHA Leader by Catherine Shaker. It's labeled Mom, You Got This. It's Feeding is Communication. When we help NICU caregivers interpret what their preemie is telling them during feeding, we support the parent-infant relationship. And having never breastfed a human being to life, I can only talk about it from holding a bottle side, and neither of my boys were preemies. They were large and in charge 9-pound babies, so there's that part. But feeding a child is terrifying in its instance where from a father, and Michelle, I'm going to go to you here in a second because I feel like you're going through this now, but like from a father's point of view, I'm always worried about, is my kid eating enough? Are they getting too much food? And that's from the full term. I couldn't imagine a NICU, and I can't even imagine what my wife was going through when she tried to breastfeed and did bottles and back and forth.
Yeah, I mean, I'm happy to see this article in the ASHA Leader because I think it speaks to a lot of moms. And as a new mom myself, and as I've talked to you guys about with the tongue tie and being worried about my son's weight, that is incredibly stressful. And you mentioned it before we went on the air here, Matt, but the part about parental insecurity and that as speech pathologists in the NICU, us as well as other professionals in the NICU, it's important for us to, I mean, say exactly what the title of this is, Mom, You Got This, because it is scary to think that you may not be feeding your child enough or that they can't take it right or that they're unstable. And then you throw in not being a full-term baby. I mean, they even talk about PTSD for parents of NICU babies because of that traumatic experience of having their child in the NICU, especially for extended periods of time. So, I mean, that is a tough situation.
Yeah, like I remember when we went through with both Michael and then Andrew that there was feeding specialists coming in. There are people that know what is it, suck, swallow. What is the pattern?
Oh, for swallowing?
Yeah, for infants.
For the suck, swallow, the ripple of the tongue. The
Thank you. I was trying to remember what it was like, suck, swallow, and something else. Oh, breathe.
Breathe, yeah.
There you go.
And, you know, just important. And that was terrifying, and I understood some infant feeding. I'm not anywhere near, and I will not work with infants right now because of my lack of experience other than being a parent. But like reading through the article, and they talk about looking for moments of stress, looking for, you know, the stability, the postural control, the regulation. That's in the NICU. That from a parent side, I can't even imagine the stress.
And looking at, I think I told you all, I took my son, asked for it to see, I found a pediatric feeding specialist, SLP, and took my son to see her, even though I know that I'm an SLP, but that's not my area of extended training and expertise. So to go see her, and she was looking at him feeding and looking at his whole body. You know, what cues is he giving? Does he look regulated? How can we help him be more comfortable feeding? Do we have the right kind of bottle nipple? Are we doing this? What positioning can you try for breastfeeding that will change it? And between her and the lactation consultant I worked with, and I think this article didn't mention it, but there's so many professionals, just like you said, Matt, between speech, OTs, lactation consultants, nurses, NICU staff, that are coming in and helping these parents, and sometimes that help can be overwhelming. But how can we build parents up to like support them and help them understand what their infant is communicating and give them some of those things to look for to make sure their child is feeding successfully and comfortable feeding. And it's not a stressful experience for the parents or for the kids. And when feeding becomes stressful, then that becomes a longer term, especially as the kids get older, that can be more of a concern, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I also, like Matt, have little to no birth experience, and I'm not a parent. So, but I really think this is a very, very well-written article out of the Asha Leader. So if you have any interest at all in working with birth to three or infants or in the NICU in a hospital, I would definitely recommend this article. I really liked how it describes how they're really training NICU staff to help parents conceptualize feeding as a conversation with their infant. You know, this is a lot of language and a lot of lingo I've honestly never even heard before. Basically, the role as the feeding specialists in the NICU is to guide parents to develop this co-regulation with their infant. Basically a line of communication that drives feeding and ultimately the parent-infant relationship. So this is all, you know, this is all brand new to me. So basically I feel like this is a really strong article out of the Asha Leader. If you have any interest in working in the NICU or working with birth to three, I really like how they describe how basically they're training NICU staff to help parents conceptualize feeding as a conversation with their infant. And the role of the feeding specialists in the NICU is to really guide parents to develop this co-regulation with their infant. Basically, the line of communication that drives feeding and ultimately the parent-infant relationship. So this is a lot of lingo, a lot of language that I'm really very foreign to. I have little to no experience in this. And I feel like this article is a great segue into for anyone who's interested in working with this population. It really describes really what are the first conversations between mother and child.
And I really loved that it bullet points out examples and gave actual quotes of things that therapists can say and ways to word things or present things to describe it as a communication, just like you said, that I'll read the one that they gave. Right. When the milk is splashing out of her mouth, Elizabeth might be trying to tell you that her mouth is too full. I think we'll give her a brief break from sucking to clear her mouth and then offer the nipple again. So they're giving examples of how the SLP can help train the parents and train the staff to see that and to read those communication cues.
For sure. And that's actually part of what the article labeled as anticipatory guidance. So that's, for example, providing supportive swaddled side lying, offering opportunities for deep breathing, decrease the flow of milk, co-regulated pacing by imposing pauses like you just suggested or read, loss of flow at the lips, supporting state regulation through gentle, thoughtful rearousal, and decreased feeding demands at the earliest stage of disengagement. As compared to the guided participation, which, what was that? That is where they basically involve learning through collaboration. So
there you go.
Again, feeding time is stressful with a 5-year-old or a 2-year-old or healthy, full-term, bouncing 9-pound baby boys. I can't, you know, when we look at the NICU, it's even more terrifying wondering if they're not aspirating.
Yeah. And making sure that their, you know, weight gain is such a priority for any child, but especially a child in the NICU, that it can become a very stressful thing for parents. And then to throw that out there, because I'm sure we have a lot of moms who listen, there's a lot of females who are SLPs. You know, when you're breastfeeding or you're trying to pump and give the child breast milk from a bottle, stress on the mom does not help your milk supply. So how can we support the mom to make this a less stressful experience?
And oh, sorry, Mike, what were you going to say?
Yeah, and the article lists straight up exactly what these moms are worrying about, like basically asking, will he choke? Will I know what to do? Being a male who is not a parent, you can only imagine how terrifying that is. I have nephews I have a nephew who's an infant. So to think about having to do this it's definitely a very, very stressful thing.
And let me go on record as saying, and this is just my opinion, but so this is me, but feel free to email speechscience2018@gmail.com. It doesn't really matter if you are breastfeeding or doing it by the bottle, nutrient. And don't feel terrible. Like, as a parent, I can kind of, my wife has given me the side eye on that one. But you know what? I mean, especially if we're looking at NICU babies, if feeding is feeding.
Mm-hmm. I'll second that too. And I think parents, dads and moms need to hear that. I know the term has been pushed that at breast is best, and research shows the nutrients that they get from that are, you know, ideal. But guess what? Fed is best. And I've heard that more often now, and I love that as a new parent myself. Is feed your kid and don't feel bad about how it's done. Like, we as parents, we have to do what we got to do to take care of our kids. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I will, and I apologize. I know we want to move on from here, but like, I can't get over the bullying in the parent realm sometimes, and even in like the medical world, when we look at the difference between people that believe in breastfeeding only or bottle feeding only, it's very terrifying.
Yeah. And I know we have other things to talk about, but this is such a fresh experience for me, and going through having major issues with my son with weight gain and with his tongue tie and with, are we going to be able to breastfeed and really doing a combination of that? It's a very stressful thing. And as a mom, you feel like the one thing you should, in a lot of ways, be able to do, because it's so natural and it's all this, is be able to feed your child. And you feel like you're failing in some way if you're unable to. And I hope that any mom listening will know that, like, if you are feeding your child, you are not failing. And that doesn't matter how you're feeding them. So.
Right.
Yeah.
Michael, I can put this for as like the guy in watching this happen to my wife and stuff. It would be like someone being mad at you because you eat frozen meals over home cooked meals, and not just mad, but like would tell you that you're a terrible person for doing it.
Well, I'll throw this out there because I think that it's wonderful. I love that the medical field, because there was a history of pushing formula unnecessarily on babies and moms. So we've kind of come the opposite pendulum swing of that. And we need to find some kind of balance, because there's moms who physically cannot, for whatever reason, breastfeed. And they're made to feel, like you said, Matt, guilty about it. And we got to kind of shift away from that. I how many handouts I received on breastfeeding while I was pregnant, and I had full plans to breastfeed my son. But one of them I was given, I even saved it because I thought it was so bizarre. From a communication perspective, think of this. Instead of saying, here are the benefits of breastfeeding, the handout title was top risks of feeding your child anything other than breast milk.
What?
I can't make that up. And I'm like, you could have given me a handout that said benefits of breast milk. And these are the things you can do to hopefully be able to breastfeed, right? But instead it said, increase risk of this. And like, it made you feel like if you were unable to breastfeed, you were screwing your child over in some way. And I'm like, whoa, hold on a second. Like, this is not the point of education on breastfeeding, you know? So anyways, I know this is such a recent thing for me that I think about it a lot, but
no, it's good.
We need to support new parents and as dads, for any dads out there of a new parent, you know, support your wife and the mom.
Bring her home flowers every couple weeks.
But just little things, you know, make it a team effort as much as you can. Whoever it is that anyone supporting a new mom. To help them in whatever way they need to feed their kid.
I'm with you. It's crazy, and I never realized how involved the breast versus bottle discussion was until we had kids. So
yeah, and finding from a bottle side too, a kid, especially a NICU baby or a baby with a tongue tie like my son, you've got to work to find the right kind of bottle and nipple to use with that kid. So that can be a challenge in itself, because now you're thinking, my kid won't even take a bottle. So, you know, work with use the resources that are out there. If you have an opportunity to work with a lactation consultant or work with an SLP, you know, take advantage of anything you can, because, you know, we gotta use those skill sets when they're available to us.
And we want to hear from you. Are you a lactation consultant? Are you a SLP who works in the NICU on feeding? Or have one of your kids gone through what we just described? Head on over to our website, podcast.speechscience.org. Email us, speechscience2018@gmail.com, or give us a phone call, 614-681-1798. Or if you're a tweeter and not a talker, #speechscience. We also have a brand new Twitter account. Sort of. We changed the name on it last week. We are now the Speech Science Pod. Much more easy to remember than speech_scientist.
Hey, everyone. You know, let's all stop what we're doing right now and take a moment. That felt good, huh? Just like that, we had a nice, special sort of moment. Together. Of course, they don't all need to be quiet moments to be special. They could be loud moments, goofy moments, sporty moments, dorky moments. Moments where we talk or walk or just hang out. It doesn't really matter. They all count. Because every time dads like us take a moment like that to spend with our kids, well, it's pretty momentous. Sounds like somebody agrees. So let's take a moment to make a moment. Today, call 877-4DAD-411 or visit fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
I'll take that resounding answer as great job, Matt, and let's move on.
Great job, right. Matt. Let's move on.
Texas, awesome. Oh, everything's bigger in Texas, including violations of IDEA. Basically, they found out back in October, I believe, last January, they broke maybe a few federal laws, and they said, hey, we'll fix it ourselves. And the feds, this is coming out of edweek.org, the feds have said, no, no, no. You need to do better. And now Texas is going to need to come up with $3.3 billion over the next 3 years to fill in the gap of the things they screwed up.
I think we originally reported on the original article about this.
Yes,
way
I think
back
you're right.
When.
I think you're right.
Remember that? Yes. So here we are. So here we are. And there was an independent study done on some terrible, terrible things that were done to special education kids, special education families and schools. And now, boom, $3.3 billion with a B over the next 3 years to pay for additional special education
services. Can we give a really quick, like, 3-sentence recap of what some of those issues were?
Yeah, basically they set up an 8.5% benchmark or cap on the amount of students that could receive special education. They did that for about 10 years.
10 years. Wow.
Which was, so the national average, this is coming out of the Houston Chronicle, the national average of students in special education is about 13%. And Texas said, no. We'll cap that at 8.5. In eliminating the cap, they estimate it'll cost the state billions of dollars to provide special education to an additional 189,000 students who need that.
I mean, I know that we have averages in the world, but to say there's a cap on the number of children that need services just seems...
Saves money, man.
I get that. But...
It was just complete violation of IDEA.
Absolutely.
It's every single thing they did, they were just trying to save money, just lowering caseloads, lowering the amount of kids that needed services, saving money for districts, saving money for early intervention. And here we are. This is what happens when you don't follow the law and you are not providing the services that these children and these families are worthy of having. This is absolutely
ridiculous. And I do want to make a point saying that this is not because of a therapist saying, oh no, I don't think that this issue needs direct special services. This is not from an SLP or, you know, saying, oh, the kid, you know, it's not adversely affecting the education because it's an R in high school. Or, you know, a physical therapist saying, hey, you can interact with your environment. That's not what this is. This is literally the state saying, yeah, no, you've hit your cap. You can't do any more kids.
Wow.
Exactly. And I think it's very clear to all of our listeners that our very educated SLP fan base out there, Texas is one of those heavy red states that will do everything they can to save money with Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, all of those things. And this was clearly one of those efforts, clearly trying to save pennies, save money by decreasing services for kids who needed it. And based on federal law, that's not going to happen. So $3.3 billion over the next 3 years, that's basically completely impossible.
So funny you say that. It was Texas Education Association Chief School Financial Officer Leo Lopez said the department estimated the increase in special education enrollment based on conversations with staff. And Representative Dan Hubbardy, a Republican out of Houston and the chair of the House Public Education Committee, said, quote, he wants backup. Give us backup. Show us how you got this number. So he doesn't believe it's the $3.2 billion number.
Interesting. Wow. I keep saying that. I'm sorry, but I'm shaking my head right now.
There's no way they're going to be able to raise $3.3 billion. So I don't know what they have up their sleeve. I don't know what they're planning on doing, trying to sweep it under the rug and hope it goes away. Who knows? But this is such a dereliction of duty. And this is just, this is unbelievable. Any SLP, OT, PT, ABA, DIR, whoever you are out there, this should absolutely make your skin writhe. This is terrible. This is absolutely terrible. This is terrible for the professionals who are doing the work, terrible for the families, terrible for the kids. Things like this should not be happening.
That, and I
anywhere.
Feel like the therapists are often the people, just like you've talked about, Matt, being in the schools, who are trying to say, I have too many students on my caseload. We need more services. More kids need this support. And I can see that trickle-down effect of a cap like this just making their jobs so much more difficult.
Well, and the article on the Houston Chronicle, the link, it was linked in the EdWeek article. It says, even if the state finds and approves the $3.2 billion in additional special education funding for districts, Guy Sconzo, former Humble ISD superintendent, said it won't be enough to cover all the expenses. Texas does not cover the cost of educating each special education student, leaving districts to make up the difference. Then there will be additional costs associated on top of that 3.2 for hiring what they call notoriously hard to find special education teachers and staff members, including SLPs, OTs, and PTs.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
So there might be some job openings in Texas. That's a positive.
There you go. Hey, there's no income tax there, so state income tax.
See? Look, we can find the silver lining in everything.
Well, that might not be for long.
They're going to need that revenue.
Hey, come to our state. Exactly. We sort of maybe have major taxes now. Oh.
Ohio?
Texas. If you're an SLP in Texas, email us. SpeechScience2018@gmail.com. Head to our website, podcast.speechscience.org. From there, you can rate us and also subscribe to previous episodes or give us a phone call, 614-681-1798. So far we've had feeding, we've had Texas-sized bad news, but how about something that's a little bit, I don't want to say fun, but an interesting way to train family members. This is coming out of the Tri-City Herald. I don't actually know where that's at. Oh, Washington. Basically, they are training family members to identify what it's like to live with dementia. In one situation, they put a person in a dark room with a strobe light and had them try to do mundane tasks, and some of the people couldn't do it. Others were given headphones with a low buzz of barely audible radio traffic. Because they say, quote, people with dementia have a hard time sorting out background noise. I think this is wonderful. I mean, I don't know how many times I work with a family, and a lot of times it's education for the family of what's going on.
Hey, well, first off, Matt, I do love the variety in the articles this week. So
hey,
for everybody, especially you who pulled these this week, I'm impressed. I like the different parts of speech that we're touching on, from feeding to special education to now dementia. But I'll add to what you said that I would like to go through some of these exercises, having had family members and then patients that are dealing with dementia and memory issues. And I think anytime we can try to give someone, it's not going to be the real experience, you know that, but to give them a taste of what that difficulty might be like would be potentially really beneficial. I went to a training that was about visual impairment, and it was really interesting. One of the presenters gave us gave us a math worksheet to do, and then each of us had some sort of piece of equipment, whether it was blinders or some pinhole cup, something to simulate a different type of vision impairment. And then they simulated a kind of a classroom situation, and it really gave me a new appreciation on here. Depending their vision diagnosis, even though they're low vision and they're not totally blind, they often get missed in classrooms because it takes them longer to do an assignment or to read that paper or whatever else. And so that's getting some sort of hands-on experience of what dementia would be like could really change a caretaker's view of giving them more patience or whatever it is with that family member.
Hey, if there's anything out there that can help, because we know as speech pathologists, we know that these Alzheimer's, dementia, these are just as hard on the direct family members. So anything that they could go through, anything that they could do to help them with the process of the grieving and the negative changes and all the difficulty and all the stress and all the trauma they're going through. Anything that can help, any way we can use technology to help people, this seems like it.
And in some ways, dementia and Alzheimer's is harder on the surrounding people than the patient, because they're seeing it versus the person losing those memories who may not be cognitively aware of it.
So this is, and I was reading a little bit deeper or dive deeper into this, and it's interested in, it's called the Dementia Coach. And when you go to the dementiacoach.com, it's Rick, I'm trying to find his name. I just had it, but I'm reading about these national, dementia practitioners, Rick Bennett, the Dementia Coach, that is who is in the article. And the National Council for Certified Dementia Practitioners, you can apply and become a National Certified Dementia Practitioner. And They're healthcare professionals, frontline staffs, and clergy who work in healthcare, such as administrators, dementia unit managers, nurses, social workers, home health aides, personal care assistants, activity professionals, dietitians, PT, OT, speech, physicians, Alzheimer's coach, et cetera, et cetera.
This idea. No, I want to go check out this website now.
Yeah, I'll link it in the show notes. But, I mean, dementia is so scary because there's so much that we don't know about dementia. And it's hard because, like, sometimes as I tell my patients and my families, is that, like, we know how dementia happens or how it works. And we know some therapies that can help. But it affects the brain in such a unique way that, and it's just kind of how language is that they may be perfectly fine talking about cooking in the kitchen, but you set them, you know, they sit down in the living room and they can't remember who's sitting next to them. It's just such a scary disease or disorder, at least for me, who working with them, it just scares me.
So that's really why I find this so interesting, is how are they able to do this when we still know so little about dementia? This seems like such an intimate thing to go through that really makes it feel like you have dementia. So this I don't know how that they were able to do this and put this together, but this seems like a real technological breakthrough.
I kind of want to look up more into the certified dementia practitioner side too now.
Yeah, I'm pulling up the website now. I'll look at it later. Sorry, getting distracted.
Oh, hold on. The fees. Oh, that's not bad. Okay, your fees are $125 a year.
Yeah.
Not bad.
Renew is $150. That's not bad. But I'm guessing if it's like, you know, I'm going to look more into this. Oh, no. Oh, wait, no, that's if you're a care manager. I'll look more into it. Maybe we can bring somebody on and talk to them later on in the year.
I think I've actually seen something. I think it was on like 60 Minutes or something like that, where they had a man go through this, where he was wearing the glasses and the headphones. And they had him like go into a hotel room and just pack a suitcase on like a very simple task, and he just wasn't able to do it like with any of these like the thick gloves. Mm-hmm.
I remember this. I want to find this now. I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yes. Yep. Just a little flashback, deja vu to grad school.
I'm looking that up as we speak.
Yeah, dementia stimulation maybe or. Yep. This is how podcasts work, guys. We just
That's
add
right.
to it as we go.
Well, if I can find it, I'll bring it back. But are you a certified dementia practitioner? Have you been to the dementia coach or have you worked with families? Let us know. SpeechScience2018@gmail.com, 614-681-1798. Those are the digits you can leave us a voicemail, or SpeechSciencePod or hashtag SpeechScience gets a hold of us on Twitter. Coming back after the break, we're going to wrap the show up, and we've got someone running for office, which would be pretty good for speech and language pathology. You're listening to Speech Science.
As humans, we ask ourselves all kinds of questions. But what if we were forced to ask ourselves a question every day that affected the outcome of the most basic things? The most important things in our lives. The question is, what is your sexual orientation or gender identity? And the answer is the difference between keeping your job or getting fired. The answer is the difference between staying in your home or getting evicted. The answer is the difference between receiving medical treatment or not. Because in 31 states, it's legal to discriminate against people based on their answer to this question. LGBT Americans have the right to say, I do, but they don't have the same basic rights as everyone else. Get the facts at beyondido.org. Brought to you by the Gill Foundation and the Ad Council.
Well, Welcome back to Speech Science. During the break, I was unable to find that video, but if I find it before throwing it up, I will put it in the link. The video we're talking about is, what did you say? It was from 60 Minutes?
It was 60 Minutes or like Nightline or one of those shows that are all the same.
I love those
and they
shows,
did
though.
They did a special on a simulation.
I found it.
You did. What was it on?
There you go.
It is Experience 12 Minutes in Alzheimer's Dementia. Let's see. Huh. All right, I'll put the link down here, and we'll just share a quick thing of audio. It's because you said Nightline. That's how I figured it out, Michael.
Dun, dun, dun.
Nice.
It's your fault that we're doing this now. Share computer sound, and here we go.
Blaine tries to accomplish his first task, clearing the dishes off the table. But when he goes to put them away, he can't find the kitchen. So he gives up.
Well, I don't know where to put them.
Blaine finally finds the kitchen, but he can't remember why he's there. And again, the similarities to his mother were astounding.
There you go. We'll put the link in the show notes.
Awesome. Thank you for finding it.
Yeah. Thank you, Michael, for saying Nightline. There you go.
My pleasure.
Not related to that. Down in, I don't know, I don't have a way to transition out of that. Michelle, down in your old stomping grounds, Arizona State Superintendent of Public Instruction, one of the candidates is Kathy Hoffman.
What state do you think I lived in?
Didn't you live in Arizona?
No. Every time.
Where were you?
I was in West Texas and in Colorado.
Oh, well, you know what? I tried.
That's all right. Bring it on. Arizona. Here we go.
No, I can't. Kathy Hoffman works as the Peoria School District as a speech pathologist for kindergarten through eighth grade education. According to her website, Hoffman studied SLP at University of Arizona in order to, quote, support students with a wide range of needs from bilingual and English learning students to children on the autism spectrum. So she is running for state superintendent.
Hey, shout out to her.
And why is that important, you say, right?
Tell us, Matt.
Somebody asked me, why is that important?
Why is that important, Matt?
Our sister show, Exceptional Leaders, hosted by SLP Mailing, actually had a nice little sit-down interview with Kathy Hoffman, and that dropped on Monday the 22nd. So we will put a link over there as well. So make sure when you are done listening to us, you go and listen to Miss Hoffman as she runs for her position. Have you guys ever wanted to run for anything?
It definitely crosses your mind. You think about it here and there because you get so fed up with the way things currently are. But I don't know if I would ever actually
do it. That's fair. Michelle?
I can't say that's on my bucket list.
Really?
Yeah. Why, do you think I'd be good at it? Should I start looking into this?
I don't know. I would like, I always kind of like doing it. So,
yeah,
I don't know.
Well,
I like being involved with it as much as possible.
We'll do your ticket for a hot for fill in the blank.
That's right. Hot 2020.
I'll run as whatever power position is in power.
Global warming.
There we go.
2020.
If I found, I'd have to find something I was really passionate about to want to run for.
See, and I think I'm arrogant enough that I feel like I could fix everything. Like, and Michelle, you've known me long enough that you probably know that that's not a joke.
Oh, goodness, Matt.
Just saying.
How about this? You let us know when we can throw up your political advertisements on the podcast.
It may be coming sooner than you guys think. On that note, what are you guys doing this week?
You do always fix the audio. You do always fix the audio.
That
is
true.
That is true.
When we get off and have to log back in the podcast world.
Or when I'm scratching my beard in the microphone.
Like that?
This is podcast real life, people.
Oh.
Or when we're slurping.
All right. Anyways, Michael, what is happening with you this week?
Pretty much the same old. Have a meeting a bunch of new families, a bunch of new clients, tons of IEP meetings, and just really meeting with parents and other speech pathologists, doing a lot of collaboration programs that we're doing. So staying busy.
And Michelle, how's life treating you with baby science this week?
Baby speech science. You know, we're trucking along like that first article said. Shout out to all the new moms out there. You got this, because I'm right there with you. And yeah, we're doing well. Nothing too new here. I'm trying to do some more reading. That's a goal for myself this year. So
there you go.
Yeah.
For me, I've got, by the time this episode's hit, I will be helping my oldest recover from a minor thing. He is in my room, in the room right now, so I don't want to go into too much detail, but we'll be doing that. Yeah, that is you, buddy. And other than that, just more ETRs and more IEPs this week.
Hey, school SLPs and all the SLPs, you got this too.
Hashtag the speech science life.
That's right. Ooh.
I think we have a hashtag game for the next week.
Yeah, what's our hashtag game?
Speech science life. Let us know what you're doing in the SLP world and use hashtag speech science life, and we will finagle something free for you from Lucas Stuiber.
Ooh, ooh.
That's a good idea. So the person who uses the best hashtag,
yep, Speech Science Life. Make sure you send that to us. And also, while you are on your iPhone, head over to iTunes. Make sure you rate and review us and subscribe if you have not. Steal somebody else's phone and subscribe for them to this podcast. Our music tonight, our opening music was "Please Listen Carefully" by Jazar. It's licensed under an attribution and share alike license. Our bump music is "The Temperature of the Air on the Bow of the Calateen" by Chris Zabrinsky. And our closing music tonight is "The Slow Burn" by Kevin McLeod. Those are both licensed under an attribution and share alike license. I think we've taken it long enough. So like Mrs. Wright says, be a willow, because the oak will crack under the windstorm. The willow, however, will bounce back up to form. For Michael McLeod and Michelle Wintering, I'm Matt Hott. And until next week, so long, everybody. Good job, guys.
You're listening to the Exceptional Podcast Network.